Everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. I'm so glad that you are with us tonight. If you're joining us live, or if you're even just joining us on the recorded session, we are excited to have you joining us as we dive into this month. This is month of February. We're talking about homeschool IEPs, and today or tonight we're specifically focusing on what if I'm COVID homeschooling. And how do I handle keeping records if I'm not quite sure if I'm going to send my child back to school, and when schools reopen and maybe they're closed in your area, or when services are more available for my student, or I'm ready to send my child back right now, but I'm homeschooling, and what should I be keeping records for so I can be ensured that I can ask for services when services are back and my school is back open for my child. So that's what we're talking about tonight. So definitely share this broadcast with people that you know that may be homeschooling now because of the pandemic, or are considering that they want to homeschool but kind of on the fence because, well, I don't want to lose services. And so we're just going to talk about a lot of those things tonight. And I also want to thank Maloney Method. They are one of our sponsor for this broadcast. And about halfway through, we're going to hear from them just a little information about their curriculum and how it's helped one mom with helping her child learn to read. So I'm going to bring Vicki and Amanda on. And so I just want you to join our conversation, definitely share this broadcast with others, as well as put your comments and questions in the feed. Whether you're watching us on YouTube, Facebook, or on Periscope, you can do that in all those places. We'll see them on our screen, and we can bring them up and include them in our conversation tonight. So I'm going to add Vicki and Amanda here. Welcome, ladies.
Hi, Peggy.
Hi, I'm so glad to have you both with us. I'm back with us. We've changed our names since then. We were Sped Homeschool Conversations, now Empowering Homeschool Conversations. And if you missed Vicki and Amanda's last interview with us, we were talking all about record keeping for going to college and post high school records, and just asking for accommodations in college jobs and those types of things. So it was an incredible interview. So definitely check that. And as I go in and redo the editing tomorrow with adding some more information in the description, I'll make sure to add those links there as well to make it easier for people to find that. So I'm excited to have you back, but if our audience probably doesn't know the two of you, so I'd love for you two to get us started just by giving us an introduction, who you are, what you do, and why you're so passionate about helping parents with children who have learning differences.
So we are the Inclusive Education Project. Amanda and I like to say that we're...
Your website here.
Yeah, thank you. We met in law school many, many moons ago, and it was always a dream of ours to have a law firm together and that would advocate on behalf of children with special needs. And although Amanda and I started our law careers in different firms, we very quickly realized that we could do more for our clients if we just kind of came together and created a law firm. And then along the way, we got some great advice to create a nonprofit. So the Inclusive Education Project is a nonprofit, and we're able to provide a lot of our services to low-income families for free, pro bono. And, you know, just being able to advocate on behalf of children and getting them the services that they need really keeps our passions going. I'm sure I forgot a ton of things, but that's why Amanda will cover me and on the other point.
Yeah. So, I mean, we like to say, like, we eat, sleep, and breathe education, special education, disability rights, because we're more than just attorneys filing lawsuits. Like, we're more in depth in it. We network with not attorneys, but with educators and therapists, and we really try to learn as much as we can about, you know, new methods and ways of teaching and different learning styles. So that way we really can be what we call like part of the team for the families that we represent, more so than just being attorneys, just trying to be there, helping them navigate through the school system, because, you know, they have enough on their plate as it is, having a child with a learning difference, with a disability. We want to be able to be kind of that guide for them to try to help them through. And, you know, what Vicky was saying with our nonprofit, we really found that we were able to help in a different way than a lot of the law firms that currently exist. If parents want to go to court and they want to have that day in court and they want to fight super aggressive in that way, there's a lot of attorneys out there that are great to do that. And we just found that there's so many families out there that they're going to need help from 3 to 22. It's not something that can be a one-stop shop that they do one thing one year and then their problems go away. Unfortunately, as the kids grow and learn and go from school to school, things change. What might have worked one year doesn't necessarily work the next. So we really pride ourselves on being able to be there for the family for the long term if they need us.
That's awesome. And you're both in California, so I just wanted people to know that as well, and practicing in that area.
Yes.
But your website has some really good resources for families who live anywhere. So
that's, yes.
Definitely in your nonprofit. So yeah, their website is inclusiveeducationproject.org, and I will again put that in the notes in the description for the YouTube video, and we'll make sure that people can link to you there as well. So thank you for that introduction, and yeah, we're focusing on a little bit of a different topic, because usually we focus on parents who are homeschooling in the long run or just kind of have been disenfranchised with the public school and are like, okay, we're done, now we're going to do this. But we're talking about record keeping for possibly re-enrollment or requesting services, and homeschoolers can also request services from public schools. And so I think it's important for those two as well to hear what you two have to say about, you know, just what parents can be doing to be tracking things, keeping records, even records from like therapists that they're working with and other things. I don't think we often think about all the things that we should probably be keeping track of that will help us advocate for our student in the long term. So I'm excited to hear what you have to share. So I thought I'd start by asking, you know, if a family was considering homeschooling or just started recently and their student had an IEP in the public school, what records and information would a parent want to ask from their teachers, the therapy providers that are working with their student?
I mean, certainly as much information as they can gather is going to be important. Certainly if they have an IEP, if they have a 504 plan, those documents, any assessments that have been done, progress reports. But, you know, I'd say document, and to what you were saying, documentation for any phase of the education realm, whether you're going into homeschooling, out of homeschooling, planning for college, any of those senses, documentation is so helpful, not only in informing people who are going to be new to your child's education, but also for you, because not everyone remembers everything day to day. There's so much going on that you might have a frame of reference of being like, I think that's what my child was able to do a month ago, but it might have been 2 days ago, or it might have been 3 months ago, you know? So I think asking those kinds of questions to get any kind of data or, you know, daily tracking of progress from teachers, from therapists is often helpful too, because, you know, we find in meetings a lot of times when questions are asked, like, how often is a behavior happening, or how often is a student able to use a certain skill, a guess occurs when they respond, right? They say, I think this, and the guess may be a good guess, and it might be, you know, appropriate for what they're thinking in that time. But oftentimes when we say, well, go back and take some data or look at the actual like hard data, it's a completely different scenario. So data can show us a lot if it's being taken.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I know I've even talked to some parents who have withdrawn their student, and they all of a sudden need the IEP, and they say, well, I go back and the school won't give me anything. And they never in the first got the IEP, which legally they should have a copy anyways, shouldn't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. We always encourage our listeners, I'm talking like we're on our podcast, but we friendly advice to people that are not our clients, because if they are our clients, we're always asking for a draft of the IEP before the IEP meeting even happens, so that the parents can digest that information, and then anything that they don't necessarily understand, they can come ready to the IEP and ask those questions. It's a more efficient way of, we think, running IEPs. And then most definitely, once you've had the IEP, you know, we encourage parents to, you know, at least sleep on it, right? Maybe you go and your spouse isn't able to go, so you want that information to be related to him or her. And so, yeah, they are definitely entitled to a copy of that IEP. I also, as Amanda was talking, I'm sure a lot of new listeners coming to you, you know, experienced the pandemic teaching in a public school from March to June, and then made a decision for the 2020-2021 school year to homeschool. And I at least wanted to kind of point out one of the bills here in California, California Senate Bill 98. Which essentially indicated that the IEPs should still be developed within this pandemic time. Because March to June, really, everybody was just kind of freaking out. And we didn't really know on anything.
It was mass chaos.
Madness. And so because, you know, we had a little bit more time, and obviously the summer, and California's Senate was able to pass this bill, it was like, all right, y'all better have your IEP meetings whenever they occur, you know, naturally within the year. And within those IEPs, you need to be talking about what will happen if schools are closed. Now, obviously, that bill was created before we were already, you know, almost a year into this. But that's something important for parents to know as well, is that, you know, if you were supposed to have an IEP meeting before you pulled your kid, okay, maybe they just kind of washed their hands. But having those prior IEPs kind of gives you a sense, and what we saw with a lot of parents, now that they were the teacher, they were really seeing what their child was capable of and what they were, you know, really not capable of, right? And more often than not, we've experienced parents saying, my kid can do a heck of a lot more with the right support.
Exactly. And it, homeschooling is, it's a different context. And I mean, parents do understand that too, is that you have immediate one-on-one with the child all the time. We're in a classroom setting. That's just not possible. And so there are those advantages too. And of course, you know, you don't even have to, it's something that you should be recording, that my child is doing better, you know, with this one-on-one help and those types of things. But yeah, it's interesting as you know, laws are passed and the pandemic continues. And I was just telling Vicki before the broadcast started that I read a news article, I think it was this morning or last night, saying that on ABC News, they were saying we're thinking that the school remote learning is going to continue into the fall. You know, for a lot of parents here in Texas, we're meeting in class, but I know in a lot of states they're not. So something to think about even more long term.
Yeah, and just to, you know, piggyback on what Vicki said with the California law, you know, even though that's a California law, our laws regarding special education are federal. So the IDEA and everything, and most state education codes mirror the federal law. There have been no waivers. There have been no changes to the IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. So even if you don't live in California, your school district is obligated to still follow the IDEA the same way. And many governors have come out and have specified some guidances. We talked on our podcast a lot about what California has done, because our governor has gone a step further in saying, no, during COVID times, like, your IEPs not only have to happen, but you should be challenging these kids, not just status quo. Other states have done that. So it's important to, it'd be good to look into your state's progress and if they've made any changes. But bare minimum, you still have the IDEA. You still have an obligation to a free, appropriate public education.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That those things are still in place, and the school districts are still open. So there's teachers being paid and they're working. So that's a good point. You know, sometimes we have parents come to us and they say, "Well, I didn't get a copy of my student's IEP because I didn't agree with it." And I realize that you don't want, you know, that, but why is it important to still have a copy of that IEP, even if you refuse it?
Right. It's really important because if you don't sign consent to the newest IEP, the IEP right before that you did consent to is in stay put, we call, right? So, and typically, I mean, the IEPs, they should differ in different ways, but for the most part, they're the same types of services, same types of accommodations. Maybe they change something in the newest one, they're taking something away, so you just like don't agree with it. But it is important to have a copy of that simply because, like we were saying, you have become the teacher. You have become the person that when you get that kiddo back into school and they're trying to look for data as to create new goals, who is the teacher that's providing the present levels? You are. So even as a template to have kind of like, well, what was Johnny working on before? You know, were you okay with the new goals and the new IEP? It just was they were taking away a service and that's why you didn't agree. Okay, well, let's look at these goals and then just try it throughout the year. You know, was Johnny able to do it in 2 months as opposed to the year that they had given him? And then you're tracking that, right? So it's almost like a template that you could use to prepare yourself if you believe that you will transition back into an IEP once you get back into public school.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Do you have anything to add, Amanda?
I mean, I guess, you know, on that, just the present levels, like Vicki said, all that information, whether or not you agree with what's being proposed and goals and services, there's still an update. It's still an update on your child that could be helpful for someone. Because most of the time that's what happens. Like, yes, there are some times where the present levels are challenged. Not everyone agrees with the present levels, but for the most part, usually that's just, you know, here's what the therapists are different saying, here's what the teachers are saying, here's what the parents saying. So it's good information for everyone to have, whether or not, you know, the recommendations that follow are gonna be implemented.
Right. And it might be easier for you to see or define your concerns that way as well, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you had a gut instinct before and that's why you didn't agree with it. But then once you got your hands dirty and really were getting in there, you're able to define that. And it's, I mean, the one good thing about the pandemic is that it really has, and not that parents weren't paying attention before, but they weren't in the school. So, you know, your kiddo comes home, kind of tells you some stuff, and you're like, did that really happen? You know, and you're just like, okay. But then when you're in there and they cannot pay attention, and Zoom is its own thing, you know, kiddos become zombies, as I like to say, you know, zombies, just all that. But you really start to see, what are the thought processes? You know what? She cannot do multi-step math calculations. And you wouldn't have known that otherwise. You might have helped with homework, but really seeing how she's processing the information, if there's any output of that. And I think that, you know, as a template, that's a great, you know, the old IEP and the new IEP can really be helpful in next steps.
That's really good point. That, yeah. It has woke a lot of people up. So that, we had a question. Just where do we find each state's progress? Is there, do you know if there's a central place that states are, or I suppose it would probably be on the state education website that probably you're going to see.
I'd say that'd be a good starting place. Go, and then I know, I mean, with everyone being home, I know our governor and our Department of Ed, they've been using social media a lot to get the word out because, you know, as changes happen and as they're trying to give information out to people, it's seeming to be the best way to do so. So I know, like, I'm constantly seeing our governor on Instagram providing information. So if they have pages like that, that's often a good resource. But certainly the Department of Ed's website would be the first place, and the state's legislature, to see if a bill had been passed to update based on COVID.
That's really good. We also have another question wondering, why would some districts deny services to homeschoolers while other districts do provide those services to homeschoolers? Is it funding? And I deal with this question a lot. I don't know if you guys do, but do you want me to answer it, or would you like to?
I mean, I would like to hear what Texas does, and then maybe we can go on.
Yeah, because each state has, they get a certain amount of funding federally from, because of the Individuals with Disability in Education Act, then 10% of that is allocated to private and homeschool students. And each school district then can allocate that 10% in any way they want. There's no regulations put on that, that it has to be towards testing, or it has to be for therapy services, or it has to, and sometimes school districts just run out because they have too many private or homeschooled students that request services. And so that's why, unfortunately, even in Texas, but district by district, we see a huge expanse of what school districts offer and what they don't.
So my answer will be a little bit different in that, for students with disabilities who qualify under the IDEA, funding's not allowed to be a reason to deny services. Oftentimes that is
enrolled for that.
Yeah.
Right.
So
right.
When a student is a resident of a school district, they have a right to get even related services, even if they're privately placed or homeschooled. And this is a issue that we find a lot, is that and we find it for the younger kiddos a lot more than the older kiddos, but for instance, like preschool age. But what will happen is a school district will recommend, say, a special day class or a classroom that the family is not comfortable with. So the family will privately place, or they'll do homeschooling. But the IEP also recommended speech and OT and maybe physical therapy. The law actually says that the parents can say, I don't agree to placement. I'm going to privately place my child, but I do agree with speech, OT, whatever the related services, and I'd like them being implemented. The school district is technically supposed to be providing those services within relation to what is being offered. So for instance, if an aide is offered and the parents are not placing them in a public school, then the aide isn't necessarily something that has to be provided. If they're recommending group speech that's supposed to be pushed into a classroom setting and they're not in a public school classroom, then that wouldn't apply. But individual speech, or even sometimes small group speech, occupational therapy, those services can be provided. It would be most of the time up to the parents to, you know, transport their child to the public school campus. But they still are technically entitled to it, whether or not, you know, they are enrolled in that physical, you know, special day class or general education class. So, you know, it gets tricky on a lot of schools don't really know the intricacies of that. Administrators are like, well, you're not enrolled, so we don't have to provide you anything. But technically, that's not what the law says.
Because, yeah, that's what we've always been told. And parents just kind of go, well, I guess we're right. Homeschooling. We don't get any services, or we get what we get. And
And unfortunately, it's because of the way that the enforcement of the law plays out that it makes it challenging, because it's not something that the State Department of Ed's are, you know, monitoring. It's up to the parents to file for due process to say, my child is eligible for services. I've consented to those services and they're not being implemented. They either would need to file a state complaint with the Department of Ed for non-implementation, or a due process complaint. And so, unfortunately, it does place the burden on the parents to seek out assistance or do it themselves.
I think a lot of parents that I've known, where they've gotten the evaluation done when their child is being homeschooled, and they just don't put anything on there for services. And so even if the child would qualify with, getting testing from like a private therapist, and they say, yeah, this child definitely needs something. They just won't put it on the IEP because they can't offer it, and therefore they just don't give them anything. And I'm coming from a state that has legal issues with denying students services already.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the background there. But unfortunately, I've seen it in every state. So
yeah.
And I've seen that before too, with an assessment is done in one setting and the team will make a recommendation for either what is the child needing in that setting. And a lot of times if they're homeschooled, maybe they're very supported, right? Because they're getting one-on-one from the teacher who is the parent. And so they may not have challenges in certain areas, but, or, they're not getting certain services, so they don't have, progress, let's say. But it's supposed to be written to, well, if the IEP team is making a recommendation for the public school, what would that child need if they were in a public school setting? So if they didn't have the one-on-one all day, would they need it? If they didn't have, a very quiet setting without other students, would they need something to help them with focus? So that's something to think about when parents are transitioning one way or another, is that the IEP should be based on recommendations for, the public school setting. What would the student need based on the skill deficits that are possibly there?
Okay. That's really good information to know. Thank you for sharing that. Sure, that'll have a lot of parents asking a lot of questions.
Yeah, sure.
So I see some of our people are having some sound issues. I hope that's fixed. It sounds good on my side. I don't know about you too, if you're being able to hear. And so it must just be something with their computer or phone. So hopefully that'll work out better for you. So there's just a lot of parents homeschooling now. And I'd love for you to share, if a parent is homeschooling, the benefits of keeping their own homeschool IEP, whether it's short term or and possible re-enrollment or even long term, of just tracking, that yearly, this is the present, where my child's at, these are goals that we have set, this is the, tracking the progress on that. What would be the benefit to doing that as a parent?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think of it outside of education. If you were dieting and were planning on, or you wanted to lose weight, so you were dieting and or working out, you would reevaluate what you're doing maybe after 3 months, right? And that's what we see with IEPs. They have a long yearly goal of doing X, Y, and Z. And then, we split it up into, every 4 months, let's check in on those objectives, right? Those benchmarks.
Right.
And so the point of that, and we know a lot of parents are like, they never send me progress on the objectives. Well, they're supposed to be sending you progress because it's called the fidelity of the data, right? Like you want to be able to, look at the information that's in front of you and make changes accordingly. An IEP is a breathing, living document. It really shouldn't just be this one time of year meeting. And, he wasn't making progress, 3 months into this goal, but instead of calling an IEP team meeting and fixing that goal, or providing more support and services, sometimes districts just let it go, right? And so when the parent now has the advantage of being able to take that information, and I know it may seem like, oh, that's just so much more information. You're already doing it because you already have your plans, right? And it's just maybe one extra thing. And I love Pinterest. Like there are teachers that share all types of forms. And on Google in general, and I feel like it's been a bit more since the pandemic that we've shared these kind of documents that you could just check off, progress or, whatever, or use work samples. Oh, okay, work sample, whatever, from this date, we can look back on. And it's super advantageous because if you're not seeing the results that you expected, then you can pivot and you can, change the goal or maybe provide additional support in a different way. And then you have all of that. And if you go back to a public school, you go, look at all this that we had done in a year. And it's very hard to argue with that.
Exactly.
The same type of thing in a public mm-hmm. school setting versus the homeschool.
Yeah, that's really good information because, yeah, and like you said, you're already doing it.
Right.
You know, just keep track of it. Just, you know, staple it to something. And, you know, we have a free downloadable IEP template for parents who homeschool with the step-by-step instructions on how to write goals. And we have a whole bunch of blogs coming out this month on different things
that's
like
great.
That. So lots of resources
awesome.
Out there. But yes, it's otherwise you're losing what you're doing. And that's important to have all that. We're already halfway through. This has been so good. We've got more questions from our audience, but I'm going to take a quick break so we can hear from our sponsor, and then I'll bring you guys back and we'll keep discussing. But if you do have questions and you're watching, definitely put those in the feed, and we'll hopefully have time to include all those as well. So I'll let Amanda and Vicki just take a break, and we're going to hear quick from our sponsor, Maloney Method.
This is Adriana. She is one of my students, and she's working with her son who is on the spectrum. How has Maloney Method assisted you with your son?
Some of my son's barriers to his learning have been his minimal expressive language and his articulation issues. Well, both of these have greatly improved over the past year while using the Maloney Method. And most importantly, they have not prevented him from learning how to read. So I highly recommend the Maloney Method's well-organized and research-backed direct instruction program. Lesson by lesson, we have had repeated success.
So thank you, Maloney Method, for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. And you can find out more about their reading program at maloneymethod.com. So I'm gonna bring Vicki and Amanda back as soon as I bring this banner down. And we are going to continue our discussion and hopefully include some of your questions as well into this. So thank you both for a quick first half an hour and just all the information. I think it's just it's like drinking out of a fire hose when you start talking about IEPs and and all of those things. And, you know, even for parents who are new, it's like, you know, I just have to get the lingo down. I remember seeing somebody say, here's all these abbreviations used in my child's evaluation. Can somebody tell me what they mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
it's like, yeah,
exactly. That's so true. So I'd like to start with another question from a viewer. Liz says, my daughter is an IEP, but we're no longer using any of the school services. Her IEP meeting should still occur yearly and updated, even though we plan to continue homeschooling, correct?
Yes. Liz, you are correct.
Yeah. Nodding, yes.
You never know what's going to happen next month, next week, next year. You want to have it updated just in case.
Very good. And I have another question about how do we document eye tracking issues? So that would be based on a goal, I'm assuming.
And typically we'll see different types of vision therapists. It just depends on what the tracking issue is. So if the child already has someone, they typically are the ones that are giving you any of the curriculum, even though it can be implemented within the school. So I would actually ask that professional, hey, what's the best way that we can keep track of this? I know some families have to go every couple of months and back to the doctor or whatnot. So that would be something that I would ask them, because they might have a template. you could.
Mm-hmm. Right. Don't recreate the wheel if you don't need to.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a really good point. Well, Liz said thank you for answering her question too. So that's really great information for parents. I'm going to see where we're at here. What type of information should parents be recording regularly, and how does that data help them and their children to be better advocates for their own needs? And what have you seen in the past of things that either have been tracked in IEPs or that parents have brought to the table that have been really helpful in saying, you know, my child really does need this service, or we found that, you know, this works well. We've tried this at home, and it's something that is effective. We'd like it implemented in the classroom, or something like that.
Yeah, off the top of my head, just because I have a couple clients reading, and under reading is reading comprehension, reading fluency, phonemic awareness, like all these buzzwords, right?
Right.
You just want to break it down. So some kiddos may have some type of auditory processing disorder. So their reading comprehension is really impacted if everything is oral, right? So do they need, and I just totally blanked on the name, there's school alley or book alley. Manager, do you remember what that is?
Yeah. Is it reading
alley? Yeah. Reading alley?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Sorry. It's like past my bedtime. I'm just exhausted by the end of the day. But, you know, and so then you're using different types of things, right? A lot of times also with the reading is like reading achievement. Okay, how many words are they reading per minute? There's different types of even benchmark tests that schools themselves do, right? So I imagine that within the Empowering Homeschool Conversations, you guys have kind of resources that parents can look at to help, you know, like you said, don't reinvent the wheel. There are things there that you can use that really help you keep track so that, you know, for instance, if there were certain accommodations like reading alley and all those things, or if your child needs, there's this cool, it's called a C pen, C as in cat. And it actually will, you could highlight the text in a book and it'll read it out loud to you. Mm-hmm. It's an assistive technology device. It's a couple $100 and it's something that the district could provide if the child requires it. So that would be like a really like tight example of why they would want to have that information handy so that they could, you know, provide it to the school district.
Yeah. And that's a good point. And the assistive technology too.
Yeah, assistive technology. I'd say certain areas that get missed a lot, because I mean, if you look at your grade level curriculum, you're going to see, you know, the reading levels, the comprehension, math, you know, functions, all of that. Mm-hmm. But things that get missed are the processing of information, attention, social skills, mental health, and executive functioning. And another big thing is whether or not a student is doing things independently or not. And so this goes across the board, right? You want to be able to track, is your child doing certain assignments, certain tasks, certain skills, are they demonstrating it independently? Do they need support? And if they need support, what kind of support? Do they need hand over hand support? Do they need visual cues, verbal cues? That's really helpful in not only tracking how much progress has made, right? If a student needs hand over hand assistance for tracing letters, and then they're able to do it themselves, and then they're able to do it free form, that's really tracking how much progress is made. So not only to see how much progress for you, but also if you go back into the school, you're able to show, okay, not only can they do the skill, but they're doing it independently. So they're writing a full sentence independently is very different than if you have to give a sentence starter and you're also having to help with spelling.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Which also, just as you were talking a minute, it made me think about how having the old IEPs, especially like a new one, because IEPs should have a baseline. So that is, you know, literally the present levels, but it's like, okay, the child can write 5 sentences. The goal will now be, we'll write those 5 sentences with proper punctuation, with the use of a graphic organizer, you know, all these bells and bells. So then that would be a great way to help the parent create their baseline. Okay, my child is reading, let's just say 100 words per minute. And by the time that they're done with this grade, it really should be anywhere from, you know, 200 to 300. Our goal will just go, you know, with 200 because of where they're starting. You're able to kind of use that as a baseline and then show that growth throughout the year.
Right. And I can also see the benefit too, if you're keeping track of those things, that you're also documenting the rate of learning, which is a really difficult thing to be able to articulate, but if you have the data to show that it took them this long to achieve this goal and these were the steps involved, then yes, more than likely that's going to transfer to other things that that child learns as well, because their brain is, it takes that long to learn a new skill or to process things.
And I think too, taking data tells you a lot more information than just the skill that you're taking data on. We get a lot of parents who say, well, how do I figure out like what, how my child best learns? And sometimes it's trial and error, right? So if you're not sure how they best learn reading comprehension, have them read in different settings. You read to them, have them read aloud, have them read in their head, have them read it while you're saying it aloud. There's like so many different ways. Have them do it in a comfortable seat, have it doing standing up, have it when they're juggling balls. I mean, you can try it to see, oh, well, when they did it this way, you know, with, you know, using some kind of tactile, okay, they were able to focus better. Or if they heard it and saw it at the same time, that means that they need the auditory paired with the visual. So there's just so much information that we wouldn't know about a child until we tried it. And assessments aren't going to always tell you, because assessments are using kind of one factor at a time. So the data can really say, you could say, okay, these three opportunities, we're going to do it, you know, this way. Then the next three, we're going to do it this way. And maybe we're going to mix it up and we're going to use two different, you know, different things along with it. It can give you a lot of information about how that child best learns. And then that information is going to be so helpful, not only for you, but if you do go back to the school and saying, I know that my child absorbs information from a text and is able to apply it to content if they pair their reading it in the book with audio.
And right now, I think that's the advantage if people are homeschooling because of COVID, is you have the ability to experiment beyond the classroom in ways that you've never had before. And to take advantage of that, you know, standing on your head, you know, all these different things that you can try. And I'm, there's so many homeschoolers that have so many ideas. You can just search for, you know, just active learning, those types of things. Our website has a whole bunch of them too. But yeah, just, and to then be able to take that information back to the school and say, we've tracked it even. we can show data for this, and this works, and this is how it could, you know, I'm also thinking it would be nice to pre-think too, how could this be implemented in a classroom or a group setting ahead of time, so that when you make those requests, they don't seem so ridiculous maybe.
The advantage that parents have as teachers that may not have have any training, but they're able to have their child succeed. And so often we hear districts say, oh, well, you know, that's in the home setting. That's going to be different than the school setting. It's like, well, guess what? It's not different anymore. So what's the excuse now? That's a good way to track it and give it to them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I, one of the questions I was going to ask you too, is, you know, just about using assistive technology at home too. And trying out some of those things. I know some of them are pricey. Do you have any suggestions for parents on, you know, if they want to try out different assistive technology to see if it may be a good fit?
I mean, Google has the Chrome extension that has the speech to text and text to speech. There's also a lot of apps that do have trials that you can try for free before you purchase them. That's helpful. And then, you know, there's a lot of Facebook groups out there that, like, parents, there are like so many parents I find that have tried so many different things that instead of just looking at an app's like reviews, like online, go into a Facebook group and say, hey, my child has, you know, auditory processing. This is what they're having a challenge with. Has anyone used this app? You'll probably get a flood of people saying, yes, it's worked, or no, use this one instead. You can kind of, because every kid is going to react differently to different programs depending on their profile. But I think that that can sometimes help get more information about, like, you know, is it user friendly? Is it good on the iPad or better on the computer?
Yeah, there's so many different types of even writing instruments that, you know, we typically see an assistive technology / speech and language pathologist, like that has that that background, provide to students. That's why we like having the assessments and encouraging them to look at different softwares, because a lot of these are really expensive, but school districts can get it a heck of a lot cheaper, especially if they buy in bulk. And so we always encourage those, like, you know, word banks. They help kiddos with dyslexia kind of put together, you know, their brainstorming and kind of word predictor that we see, you know, on those apps. But Amanda makes a great point of a lot of those bigger companies, I assume now, do a lot of the free trials for a longer period of time, just to have people, instead of just the week, maybe a month, just so you could have some interface with it, because everybody's online now. But yeah, Google has been great. We've seen a lot of those districts recommend some of those things. And the CPen was something that I'd already kind of like talked about, but even just kind of recordings on your phone, right? Maybe the child needs to, while you're lecturing, have it be recorded. Or, you know, oftentimes we'll have a high schooler and, you know, sometimes there'll be stuff written on the board. They can just take their phone out, take a picture real quick. I think we can use what we got. And when you have an Android or an iPhone, it already comes with recording on it, right? It already comes with word predictor. It already comes with speech to text and text to speech. So starting air first and trying that stuff out before you get into the price, your stuff is super helpful.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because it's amazing. It's made for just everyday people now, and you know, we just use it as a convenience, but it is assistive technology, and it definitely helps some kids with that, and to be able to document it too. I know we went into this when we were talking last, was being able to use that in taking like the PSAT or the SAT or the ACT, and having that recorded in the IEP in some sort of documentation.
Yeah, so as an accommodation.
Right, exactly. So those are some good things to be keeping track of. And if you're trying them out and they work and your student seems to be benefiting from them, then to be able to document that so you can ask for those accommodations when they do re-enroll. And, have a question about testing. And I know, I can't remember in California if it's required to do testing yearly as a homeschooler. I have to look at, I don't know exactly where this person is from, but she said, are there recommendation assessments that we can take at least twice during the homeschool year to assess where they are at grade level? I know you guys probably use a state test that assessments are based on when you're working with students. Sometimes we recommend what's called one of the tests is the MAP test. It can be used on different times of the year, and it tracks students even if you're like halfway through like sixth grade. Then it'll compare on a standardized assessment of students who are halfway through sixth grade instead of that have finished or just started. But we have what's called a quick guide on our website, Carissa, that is just on testing. We did a whole month on testing, so all of the videos or blogs we created that month are all on testing. So I will make sure to link that in the YouTube video as well. But anything else about testing? I guess maybe that's a good topic to dive into, because if you're going to have testing done, and I know a lot of parents, you know, they say, well, you know, we want maybe some private testing. How do you handle that, and then documenting that?
I mean, private testing is always good if you're able to access it. It is important to give it to the IEP team if you're, you know, going to have that meeting, so that they get that information, as well as anyone that's working with your child. It's good to have. You know, if it's any kind of cognitive assessments, any processing assessments, even someone who's not just academic based, like a speech therapist, occupational therapist, soccer coach, anyone could find that helpful, because it's going to provide some information about how they best learn. So I know that's something that families often forget. They think, well, this is a academic assessment, so I'm not going to give it to everybody, but it doesn't hurt to give it to everybody that's working with your child, because there's going to be little tidbits in there. But in terms of like the testing, one recommendation is if you're able to pick your curriculum, there's a lot of curriculum out there that is more measurable and tracks progress. Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily need to do testing twice a year, like to demonstrate progress. Like if you choose to do it more often, or if you have to do it more often, that's another thing. But a lot of curriculums nowadays that are evidence-based do have the progress tracking. That's very clear. You have that data, whether the program is online and it does it itself, or it shows you like how to do it. That's often helpful because you don't have to take it. You don't have to have your child sit there an extra test just to see. And then you get progress on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, rather than, you know, twice a year.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for private assessments, if you are able to access them by a private, you know, licensed educational psychologist, it'd be nice to see where the child started pre-homeschool. So this would be, you know, okay, they were just in the public school. Let's really see what was going on. And then, you know, if the child continues throughout the year in homeschool and you're thinking, gosh, what am I going to do for next year? You know, then you could have the same person reevaluate a year later. We want to make sure that at least a year has passed by. And then you can really, you know, use that as a form of guidance. You know, is homeschool going to be the best? You know, it may be better for social emotional issues. So maybe your child was just very anxious in a school setting. And although they may not have progressed as much as you'd like, there was progress. So then that's a reason to stay in homeschool. Or, you know, you might realize, wow, these learning differences are really severe. And I don't know that with what we had done that we could do more. So maybe I need to go back to a public school setting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's there's no one perfect solution for every right. family. And I think that that's important to note that we don't want you to feel guilty if you're ready to send your child back right now, or you want to keep them at home, or, you know, whether it was pre-COVID or post, it's just a lot of different families, different situations, and kids with different needs. And, you know, we can take that all into consideration.
And as they get older, their needs change. So what works one year may not work the very next year. You know, fifth to sixth grade, seventh to eighth, even first to second, you know, things change.
And I think parents think when I make this decision, it's like I have to be all in. And it's no, a lot of parents do it on a year by year basis.
Right.
It's best not to do it half years, but sometimes, like in March last year, it was less than half a year. But yeah, it to keep somewhat of consistency for your student, and just take it year by year and see where it goes. And there's enough that the school system and the ability to homeschool and all of that that allows you that flexibility now with so many different options. So that's awesome. So all right, well, we're just about wrapped up. Is there anything else you ladies would love to share before we're done?
You're doing the best you can, everybody. We're still in the middle of a global pandemic, and I've said in the middle of a global pandemic so many times because I think I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I don't want to be too much of a Debbie Downer, but really, you know, your children are doing the best that they can. And we've asked a lot of children during this time. We've told them that they cannot go to school. They're not going to see their teachers. They're not going to see their friends. And that was a lot. And believe you me, I know as a parent, I have a 2-year-old, so I'm lucky in the sense that she's not in school, but she was in a learning type of daycare center and she learned a lot. you know, so I feel that guilt, but you know what, just we're almost there. Like let's just keep going as best as we can. That's the only thing I would want to say to all the mamas out there. And dadas. Yeah, dadas. Exactly.
Thank you. You got anything to add, Amanda?
I think Vicky said it. I mean, yeah, just stay strong and keep doing what you're doing. You know, it's 1 year, I think, would be the other thing, I guess. You know, there's a lot that's happened in this year. There's been a lot that's been hard for these students, but kids are resilient. Yes. And you will bounce back. It might take time. It might not be, you know, 2 weeks into the new school year whenever you're in person, but they will bounce back. And, you know, as much as you're tracking now and figuring out how they're doing, it's going to make it that much easier to transition back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I thank you both for the information that you shared. And I also want to share your website one more time. Inclusive Education Project, and that's just, if you put all those words together in .org, you'll be able to find Amanda and Vicky and their nonprofit. And just the, like they said, they do a podcast. So definitely check that out as well. And just all the information that they have to share with parents and just helping kids and inclusion in the schools and in our education system. So I thank you for the work that you're doing, ladies. And I also want to thank Maloney Method for sponsoring this episode of SPED Homeschool Conversations. So next week, we're going to continue on this theme of homeschool IEPs, and we have Judy Monday back with us, and she has actually written a whole book on homeschooling a child with special educational needs, and one of her chapters is just on how to write a homeschool IEP or student education plan, SEP, and she's going to kind of go through that with us step by step on how to write that. So so that's going to be very informational.
Yes.
So you'll definitely want to join us for that next week. Also, some exciting news. We just we started doing reviews on curriculum and products from our partners. So if you look on our YouTube channel, you'll see an unboxing and a that just debuted yesterday, and tomorrow is the video review, but we also have those reviews on our website as well, so I'll share that link with you in the description and in this YouTube video as well. But check that out, and if you want to join our review crew, we are taking applications. Get a little free curriculum for your feedback, so that's a bonus as well. So lots of things going on, so just want to thank everybody for being part of our community. Thank you, Vicky and Amanda, for your time. I know you ladies are very busy, and I appreciate the wisdom that you had to share with us tonight, and it's going to be helpful to many. I definitely know
Thank you for having us on. It was great.
Thanks for everything that you do for these homeschooling parents, Peggy.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a joy. So, good night, everybody, and we'll see you again right here next week at 8 o'clock Central. Bye, everyone.
Bye.